at macfound.org.
You out there?
Good afternoon, WMNF 88.5 FM. This is Midpoint News on Wednesdays with your host, Nola. I am back better than ever on this wonderful Wednesday afternoon. And yes, it is 90 years and a day to the birthday of the late Dr. Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. As he would have been 90 yesterday. And so, I am excited to be broadcasting today, and later on in the program, we're going to be broadcasting a speech that I think is very important and still relevant till today. That is Martin Luther King's Three Evils of Society speech. The speech was given at the first and only National Conference for News Politics. It is an amazing speech which looks at America's three deadly sins, war, racism, and poverty. But before we head up to that, yesterday was the first day of the Senate confirmation hearing for President Trump's nominee for Attorney General William Barr. And if you watched it, if you missed it, it seems like everybody was pretty much primarily focusing on what his take was going to be with the special counsel's office. He seemed like he gave a whole bunch of very direct answers to it, talked about how he won't be bullied. But for me, I focused just a little bit on what his track record was. And you can read a piece on democracynow.org. And it talks about William Barr. It talks about his time. He was a former attorney general for the first George H. Walker Bush from 1991 to 93. And he was involved in the pardoning of six Reagan officials for the Iran-Contra scandal, oversaw the opening of Guantanamo Bay military prison, which was initially used to indefinitely detain Haitian asylum seekers. Barr also openly backed mass incarceration at home and helped develop a secret drug enforcement administration program, which became a blueprint for the national NSA's mass phone surveillance effort. So it's some of the things that I was a little disappointed that nobody really cared about, because when you look at his track record at the same time, even though he talked about how his family and the special counsel's family were friends, it seemed like a lot of even Democratic senators felt safe with that. But there's more to it. I believe that they need to dig a little deeper when it comes to confirmation, because you never know. And according to this piece, I'm going to post this piece on our Facebook page at Nola WMNF on Facebook, so that way you can check it out. Or you can check it out on democracynow.org. And also, how does this relate to Florida? We know fully well former Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinded the guidance known as the Cole Memo, which was pretty much had a lot to do with Florida's marijuana industry. But it seemed like he was more in favor of the Obama doctrine, which won't. So that's a lot going on right there in the Senate. Today's day two. We're going to be monitoring that. Hopefully we get to that. So, as I said at the top of the hour, and also want to thank everybody. Hopefully you downloaded that free WMNF app. And also there's a tip jar. There's a free WMNF app that way you can listen to us on the go. So tip jar there, you know, fully well, 70% of the operating costs right here at WMNF comes from you. So we encourage you to keep donating here. And a big shout out to Bill Grace. Bill Grace is going to be the phone engineer today. And of course, during the speech, there are going to be some questions just for everybody to think about. Because you'll be surprised how this speech is so relevant till today. Imagine that. There are going to be some thoughts on this speech. I want to hear from you. I encourage you to call. Even though I'm playing the speech, I will stop it and listen to what your opinion is about that. But I also want you to hear from people out there what your thoughts are on the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. What are some of the pros and cons of the fight for integration? What are your thoughts about that? There's a big debate about that. Even though his life was cut short, I would love to see what his take was on integration and where we are today. And who knows? And would he have been proud of where we are today? What are your thoughts about that? So join the conversation when it comes to that. 813-239-9663. Or you can send a text to 813-433-0885. As usual, you can send an email during this broadcast to dj@wmnf.org. So here's the speech. Take a listen. This is Dr. Martin Luther King, Three Evils of Society.
Mr. Chairman, friends and brothers in this first gathering of the National Conference on New Politics, ladies and gentlemen, can you hear me in the back? I don't know if the Klan is in here tonight or not, with all the trouble we're having with these microphones.
So we have some phone calls coming in right now, and I'm encouraged about that because I want to know what your take is, what your thoughts are about that. Chris from Clearwater. Hey, Chris. Good afternoon, Chris. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hi, Noah.
Hey, what's up?
In 1999, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s family won a unanimous jury decision.
Right.
It can be found at thekingcenter.org, the transcript and the jury deciding that there were state, local, and federal government officials involved in his assassination. And so I think that it's important that we keep on the point that we should be asking for apologies from those who are culpable and any attempt at reparations. And that we can't trust our government with to be fully armed, and that we can't trust them when they commit such high-profile assassinations like that, or JFK or RFK and so many others, where the alleged assassins turned out to not be the assassins, and that they prosecute the innocent just for the sake of, you can make up your own mind why they would do that. It's a multifaceted, you know, we should be asking for apologies and attempts at reparations.
It's interesting you brought that up because we know fully well. And the phraseology of it wasn't exactly clear because it was like the federal government was found culpable for the murder of Martin Luther King Jr., but the news refused to actually hyper-report it to make it clear. So it was like somebody was trying to hide something, you know, which you raise a good point about that. But yes, that's factual. That information, as a matter of fact, I think I will post that on our Facebook page at NOLAWMNF on Facebook, well, Midpoint on Wednesdays on Facebook for those who haven't read it, and you take from it what you take from it when you read the text out there. But yeah, a big thanks a lot for that, Chris. Yeah, absolutely.
And that the news media does not honor the family members. And, you know, when you have survivors, family, friends of the assassinated, of the deceased, you know, some folks might say, who were in doubt that the government could possibly involved, they might say that, you're dishonoring them. Well, no, they want to get justice. And so this is the multinational corporation-controlled news they lose, proving it's what you can truly use, as I like to say. So, you look at family members of JFK and RFK Jr., the same situation with their families. They just want justice, and they want awareness on these kinds of issues.
Interesting. Well, thanks a lot, Chris. That's Chris from Clearwater. Thank you so much, Chris. Yes. And we go to Daryl. Because I could go to the phone calls right now, because a lot of the speech that we're playing right now that's rolling, a lot of that could be comparable to the present day comes from the middle part of the speech and close to the end. It's very eerie. I mean, it's eerie how this man had the foresight, and it's so relatable to what we're going through today. And it makes me wonder, if he'll be proud of where we are today, because that was in 1967. But hey, Daryl. Good afternoon, Daryl. Welcome to the show, Daryl.
Hey, no.
I'm going to talk to you in a minute, Daryl. How are you?
Yeah, Happy New Year. And
Happy New Year.
Happy Christmas. But to your topic right now, if I can get my thoughts together, what would Dr. King, who would be in his 90s, what would he
think? Yeah, he'll have been 90 yesterday.
If I could piggyback off of what just Chris would said, I mean, it's a whole plethora of things that you could pluck from, what would Dr. King have to say about police who would run in the backyard of a young man in Sacramento? And I don't even know if you heard any more news about where the police just went.
No, I know what you're talking about. They fired multiple shots and stuff in the backyard. Yes.
And we had something that happened in the Savannah. He would still be addressing something like that about police brutality. But basically what you're talking about with workers that are going on, if he was still alive, federal workers who are now being compelled to go back to work without pay, which kind of like I dealt with that thing in the latter 60s when I went to Tennessee to Memphis dealing with garbage workers who were made to work in unsafe conditions, who were on strike. You know, and against the people who are anti-union, since this is a right to work state.
There is a part in that speech that he talked about, and the phrase was socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor.
And
oh my goodness!
Yeah, and
wow.
Let me basically. Well, I wish I could put this over in a whole nutshell. It's just as human beings and as citizens of this nation, how we are being unfairly treated, and the more things change, the more things stay the same. And let me encourage everybody, and I've encouraged you, I encourage myself. That's how it is with a revolution. It moves a little bit forward, and sometimes it stalls, but you have to keep going on. We don't idolize Al Sharpton. We don't idolize Jesse Jackson. We don't idolize John Lewis, because they're human beings. With their faults, their failures, but the message is still the same. And it's not just black folk. There are white folk. There are people. No, I understand. You're in the same boat that I'm in. And if something is not affecting you right, and it can possibly happen to me, that's why I need to support you and what you're going through, and whether it be in medical, whether it be in your job or whatever like that, if they want to treat you that way, what if it happens to me?
Right.
And if I don't stand up for you and you fall and then it starts happening to me, it might not be, when I start looking around, it might not be anybody there to stand up for me. There's a very famous poem about that. We don't have time for that, but those are just my thoughts. And thank you, Sarah.
I do appreciate you, Daryl. Thank you so much. That's Daryl from Tampa. Great insight. Some of the things that we're talking about. And it's really freaky to me that when you listen to that speech, and I'm just like, man, he could have been here today talking about that, and it's so relevant. And I'll just take this opportunity to actually talk to, say hello to some of our new listeners out there, because I'm getting some emails about that, some texts about some listeners. Hello, Shea Bay. Welcome to the show. Hopefully you stick with us every Wednesday, and that's great. But yeah, so I'm encouraging everybody to join the conversation out there. What are your thoughts about the legacy of Dr. King? 813-239-9663. I got Bill Grace as the phone engineer today. Or you can send me a text at 813-433-0885. Send me an email during the broadcast to dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Brett. Hey, Brett. Good afternoon, Brett. That's Brett from Largo. Welcome to the show. What's up? Can you hear me, Brett?
Yeah, I can. I don't know if you can hear me or not.
A little bit. You're a little low, so.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes. What's up?
Hey, I think that what King did and what he was striving to do, we haven't met nearly what his intentions were. And I think the gentleman that called first, called from Clearwater, and he called yesterday to a different program, and I think it was Mark that sort of just said, look, I don't want to hear it. It's this conspiracy, deep state stuff that doesn't help the conversation that you're trying to have. It hinders it. And it's divisive. And
Why do you think it's divisive? And the fact that it's public record
doesn't have any business being listened to. I just think it's BS.
You think it's BS? But it's a public record. No, he's accurate about that. Now, once you draw a conclusion, because it doesn't make it clear, because they talk about the federal government is found culpable. What does that really say? You know, like, well, you didn't protect him enough, so it's kind of murky, but at the same time it's factual, it's not rumor, you know what I'm saying? So, and the fact that and usually when other people hear people say, you know what, a part of history should just not be brought up anymore, it always seems like, you know what, that's just only making a segment of a society uncomfortable, which is something we don't do when it comes to other communities and atrocities that happen in other communities. You know, we talk about it all the time, whether in biblical terms or real terms or in other foreign governments. So I think that's the part that, you know, a conversation that you just can't reject. Do you understand, Rhett, a little bit?
Yeah, no, Rhett. I agree with you. I just think that guy tends to be very conspiracy laden. And I understand what you're saying, that there is more to it than it's single shot stuff, but I think it's divisive. And what it did to me, it diverted me from what you started talking about to begin with.
It's okay. I mean, like, that's why you could call and just rebuttal.
I guess I could be wrong, too.
Okay. I appreciate you, Brett. Thanks a lot, Brett. I appreciate you for making that point, okay? And hopefully, you know, it doesn't take away from what the objective of today really is. So, all right. Thanks a lot, Brett.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, so let's go to Melanie. Hey, Melanie. Good afternoon, Melanie. Welcome to the show.
How are you?
What's up? How are you?
Good. I have two things.
Okay.
One, I think Martin Luther King's probably the greatest American that ever lived. What he had to go through, I'm 73 years old, and I saw a lot of it. And he's awesome.
Mm.
The other issue are his speeches. They are so prophetic.
Right.
When you said Erie was really what so many of his speeches are. One of them is, I don't know where he was. He was in Atlanta, but he was talking about longevity and old age has its place. And if you listen to that speech, you knew he was going to die. You just knew it.
Mm.
And it happened right after that. So I'm glad you're bringing this up. I think Martin Luther King is probably was assassinated. He probably was involved with the government doing that. Once he spoke out against the Vietnam War, I think his goose was cooked.
So, quick question for you, Melanie. Good question for you. I mean, because you remember those times, probably vaguely so, but in the 60s.
No, not vaguely. No. 73, yeah. Okay. I remember him.
Okay. So, I mean, do you see any similar figures in today that remind you of how, because they called him a radical back then. He was a radical back then. He was referred to as a radical. He wasn't like praised like he is today. Does anybody in today's climate kind of bear similarity to how Dr. King was perceived in the 60s?
No, I don't think so. That's why I think he's so fantastic and what he did and how he did it. I was the first white person to teach at Tennessee State University in Nashville in the 70s.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, nothing that he's going to say in that speech, and I remember it distinctly, has really changed now. It's just a bitter pill that a lot of us have to swallow.
Well, I do appreciate you, Melanie. Thank you so much for calling and sharing your insight. Thank you.
Okay.
Where are you from? Is that Ozona?
Ozona.
Okay.
Nobody knows where I am. It's near Palm Harbor or Tarpon Springs.
It is. No.
Little podunk area.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot, Melanie. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so I see we have some callers over there, but I'm going to play the speech for a little bit, for a few minutes, and I'll be right back at you, all right?
And now that they have succeeded in becoming successful, they are paid not to farm. And these are the same people who now say to black people whose ancestors were brought to this country in chains and who were emancipated in 1863 without being given land to cultivate or bread to eat, that they must pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. What they truly advocate is socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor. I wish that I could say that this is just a passing phase in the cycle of our nation's life. Certainly times of war, times of reaction throughout the society. But I suspect that we are now experiencing the coming to the surface of a triple-pronged sickness that has been lurking within our body politic from its very beginning. That is the sickness of racism, excessive materialism, and militarism. Not only is this our nation's dilemma, it is the plague of Western civilization. As early as 1906, W.E.B. Du Bois prophesied that the problem of the 20th century will be the problem of the color line. Now, as we stand two-thirds into this crucial period of history, we know full well that racism is still that hound of hell which dogs the tracks of our civilization. Ever since the birth of our nation, white America has had a schizophrenic personality on the question of race. She has been torn between selves. A self in which she proudly professed the great principles of democracy, and a self in which she madly practiced the antithesis of democracy. This tragic duality has produced a strange indecisiveness and ambivalence toward the Negro, causing America to take a step backward simultaneously with every step forward on the question of racial justice. To be at once attracted to the Negro and repelled by him, to love and to hate him. There has never been a solid, unified, and determined thrust to make justice a reality for Afro-Americans. The step backward has a new name today. It is called the white backlash. But the white backlash is nothing new. It is the surfacing of old prejudices, hostilities, and ambivalences that have always been there. It was caused neither by the cry of black power, nor by the unfortunate recent wave of riots in our cities. The white backlash of today is rooted in the same problem that has characterized America ever since the black man landed in chains on the shores of this nation. This does not imply that all white Americans are racist. Far from it. Many white people have, through a deep moral compulsion, fought long and hard for racial justice. Nor does it mean that America has made no progress in her attempt to cure the body politic of the disease of racism, or that the dogma of racism has not been considerably modified in recent years. However, for the good of America, it is necessary to refute the idea that the dominant ideology in our country, even today, is freedom and equality. While racism is just an occasional departure from the norm on the part of a few bigoted extremists, racism can well be that corrosive evil that will bring down the curtain on Western civilization. Arnold Toynbee has said that some 26 civilizations have risen upon the face of the earth. Almost all of them have descended into the junk heaps of destruction. The decline and fall of these civilizations, according to Toynbee, was not caused by external invasions, but by internal decay. They failed to respond creatively to the challenges impinging upon them. If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men. The second aspect of our afflicted society is extreme materialism. An Asian writer has portrayed our dilemma in candid terms. He says, "You call your 1,000 material devices labor-saving machinery, yet you are forever busy. With the multiplying of your machinery, you grow increasingly fatigued, anxious, nervous, dissatisfied. Whatever you have, you want more. And wherever you are, you want to go somewhere else. Your devices are neither time-saving nor soul-saving machinery. There are so many sharp spurs which urge you on to invent more machinery and to do more business. This tells us something about our civilization that cannot be cast aside as a prejudiced charge by an Eastern thinker who is jealous of Western prosperity. We cannot escape the indictment. This does not mean that we must turn back the clock of scientific progress. No one."
If you just joined us right now, this is WMNF 88.5 FM, Midpoint News Wednesdays with your host Nola, and you're listening to Three Evils of Society speech given by Dr. King in 1967. Pretty much eerily very relevant to our current events right here. Your thoughts about the current events, the thoughts about the legacy of Dr. King, and what are your thoughts about that? Join the conversation on that, 813-239-9663, or you can send me a text to 813-433-0885. Or send me an email to dj@wmnf.org. I have some emails here that I would like to read. Get an email from Rick. Rick goes, "Thanks for the show today. Great job on listening to MLK. Hard not to get depressed listening to an intelligent, articulate man, as opposed to what we're subjected to today." That's from Rick. Let's go to Doug from Clearwater. He goes, kudos to you, Nola, on 2 points. One, for playing the speech from Dr. King Jr. What a fabulous speaker to learn from, and with most of us being able to, when willing to listen. The second being your factual background on the Attorney General nomination. He did offer direct answers yesterday, but when he gets in, he will... that's when we'll learn what he's about and his role. Knowing history is always important, though, and should be remembered. Absolutely. And that was a great point by Doug, because I was surprised how everybody was so focused on the Russia investigation and not talking about his track record, because he was already Attorney General under the first Bush. And some of the things that he did were very important, and they should have jumped on that, but he didn't. But I guess that's what we do over here. Another one from Joe in South Tampa. Joe goes, Nola, I believe that Dr. King's influence was so great that if he had lived through this past decades, he would have single-handedly dragged us, kicking and screaming if necessary, into a much better place. Not ideal, maybe, but better. You know, I thought about that. Great point by Joe. I thought about that because he was obviously ahead of his time in the 60s. And even right before his death, he talked a little bit about some of the cons of integration. And maybe... which actually he told Harry Belafonte that he feared he was dragging people into a burning building. So he detected some things about that. So maybe he would have been so powerful enough to drag us a lot further than we are today. And I often think about that. I wanted to regret that. Yeah, he would have been 90 yesterday. So we know fully well a lot of people lived up to 90 years old. So that was unfortunate. But let me take some phone calls right now. Let me go to Joe. Joe from Manatee County. Hey, Joe. Good afternoon, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Nola.
What's up?
Unfortunately, I kind of think he'd just be saying the same things if he still lived today.
Wow.
You know, getting civil rights passed was a huge thing, turning point for this country. But after that, you know, the way protesting works is you only get enough people out there if things are absolutely horrendous. And if you try to do all the tweaks and whatever, you need to actually have power.
Mm-hmm.
So either he would have, you know, became a politician and become I'm forgetting names right now, just like the other civil rights leaders, or he would have been giving speeches, but he'd still be saying the same thing.
I would hate to say I want to be a little bit more optimistic about this, because if this is one person I know fully well, he gave his life for this. You know,
absolutely.
And the current crop of civil rights activists, I mean, you don't see enough of that, because when they get a TV show with a few million-dollar contracts and stuff like that, they start talking something totally different, you know? Didn't seem like that guy. He just didn't seem like that, because in the face, in the 60s, he knew fully well, just like the previous caller talked about, his life was in danger.
Yep.
And he kept powering through. And he kept powering through. So,
all the time.
Yeah, I got a feeling like we'll have been better off, because he will forced us to at least be better off than what we are today. And maybe we won't end up with someone like a Trump, but who knows? But
yeah, the 60s were a weird period where there was a lot of optimism, and then it kind of just all died with the leaders. And,
yeah,
as a Gen Xer, when I saw the global wide peace movement protest that happened in, 2002, 2003, before we went to Iraq, and it did absolutely nothing. You know, they wouldn't even really talk about it on the news that much. It was just global, largest protest this world has ever seen, just saying, don't go to this war that you have no reason to go to. And it just got flat out ignored. And it seems to be the way everything's going. I don't know if you all talk about the yellow vest too much, but...
the one in France, right?
Yep. France, Belgium, Britain, Germany, I've heard. I haven't seen any of those videos, but it's just, you know, they got riot police out there decked out in black and helmets, shooting water cannons, throwing tear gas, shooting rubber bullets. Same thing we did.
You know, it's fun. You brought up a good point about the effectiveness of a protest in today's climate. And I'm actually in the coming weeks, I'm gonna have a show about that. What are the effective methods of actually protesting compared to in the civil rights movement in the 1960s? And I do have a unique take on that. And I'm going to have some guests to talk exactly about that, because it seems like it has changed. And when you talk about the protests before going to Iraq during second Bush, it seemed like the methodology to actually be effective in doing that was changing during that period, but maybe we didn't catch on early enough. Good points, Joe.
Well, it did change, and then you had the Occupy movement, and what they do to them. They put plants in there, made it seem like they were violent, same thing they're doing in Paris.
Right.
And then they bring the cops in and like, oh, we got to get rid of you because you're violent. When really all they were doing was just sitting in a place because they had nothing better to do because they had no jobs and no future.
All right. Great point, Joe. Appreciate you, Joe. Joe from Manatee County. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Sister Kelly. Hey, Sister Kelly. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nola.
Hi, how are you?
The more things change, they remain the same. Like the teacher said, my heart is so heavy to see that we have budget more for military occupation around the world and abuses. And where is the outrage of the media? This orange-haired man, he still has not shown his taxes. The media suffer amnesia because that should be harped on a daily basis. Where is Trump taxes? And the military is occupying and abusing. I can speak to that personally because my little island, San Andres Island, South America, 30 minutes south of Panama, an hour and 20 minutes from Colombia. And Colombia has U.S. military down there. And they have occupied my little island of 8 square miles with more military than native. So the natives are living in a prison camp. And Colombia is the occupier. And the media do not seek out those information because why is military in our schools here in this country? Why are certain department of the military a part of the curriculum in the schools? Why is that? And thank you. Blessings.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Sister Kelly. Do appreciate you. Thank you so much. Let's go to Gilchen. Gilchen from Tampa. Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
You know, I heard on the radio last week I believe it was in the NPR and This American Life or some sort of show it was.
Probably Democracy Now! Earlier.
No, but on this show it was a very progressive talk.
Okay.
And I heard first African United States citizen being elected in United States as a senator in 1973 to 1979. And then they have spoken about her giving speech in a Democratic National Convention. Oh, my Lord, that speech, that language that she's spoken, I can just cry. I have goosebumps. Has not stopped, even just thinking of her, talking about her, hearing about her. Her name is Barbara Charlene Jordan. I don't know if you ever heard of her.
Yes. Yes.
Stunning person, stunning human rights, stunning civil rights, stunning supporter of a human being as a being. And I just cannot believe it that, that no one ever even mentioned her name next to the Dr. King.
You're right, because what you're referring to is the 1976 Democratic DNC convention. Yeah,
Only that, she has... speech is beyond this time period.
Isn't it weird how, even in recent history, we've had, like, very articulate speakers, but it just seemed like when it comes to the Republican Party, the last two Republican presidents are just terrible. I mean,
terrible.
George Bush Jr. was horrible.
There is no conversation. There is no reality in the speech. All they have is whoever wrote is the currently applied to the TV stardom characters and the TV characters and TV announcers and media, whatever they want to call themselves.
Right.
It all encompasses that area. Nothing else. There is no reality. This woman has spoken reality of the real things in America.
You know what? Just for you bringing that up, I'm going to actually post that on our Facebook page at NOLA WMNF on Facebook. So that people, if you ever listen to that, yeah, I will. Where Barbara Charlene Jordan. Yes, you're talking about, you're referring to the 1976 DNC conversion. She was a keynote speaker, I believe. Yeah, it was a keynote address.
That language is like, to very this day, people still speak so beautiful like that. This is among the African Americans.
Stacey Abrams speaks just like that. The Democratic nominee in Georgia, the one that just lost. She actually reminds you of that. Gillum is one. I mean, we know Obama. Russian.
And I die for people like that. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. What a country.
Absolutely.
What a people.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Yes.
And being there for all of us here, because we as a people, and me, love of African Americans, truly, they know their history. They truly do. And I hope they spoke even more about their history than anybody else. Mm. They need to be brought back even further more.
Right.
Because there is no book. There is no book, literally speaking of their behalf of their struggles. None.
All right. Thanks a lot, Gilchin. Let me take some more callers right now. Thank you so much. I do appreciate you. And thanks for bringing up Barbara Georgian. Yes, absolutely. Let's get some more phone calls right now. We got William. Hey, William from Tampa. Good afternoon, William. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Nola.
Yes.
I have a Pan-African question for you.
Yes, please.
I know this was before your time, but while Dr. King was alive, how was he perceived in Nigeria, Ghana, Sierra Leone, and other countries in Western Africa?
No, I mean, those were hailed as heroes when I was there. Yes, even though I was much younger then, those were hailed as heroes. Because, you know, like, people, like, especially Malcolm X, I mean, he started making a trip, and he made a trip to Ghana, and those things started spreading, you know? So we started, they started teaching a little bit, but not comprehensively, you know, because I mean, a lot of times you really got to be in the ethos to actually feel what's actually going on and have better context. So I won't say the teachers over there and the professors over there were really very good at it, because they had their own issues over there. Everybody, the nations out there were actually trying to get independence. So so they had their own issues out there. South Africa was going through apartheid and all that, you know. Right. But yes, they were hailed as heroes, same as Garvey, you know, people like that, knowing fully well they were fighting against the struggle and stuff. Yes, absolutely.
Do you see a similarity between what has happened since his death in this country, as well as in those countries, especially with Boko Haram?
You know, oh man, you're asking a very good question. It's very complicated. There's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot of like inferiority complex going on out there with the leadership in Africa, especially West Africa, that I know fully very well, in which they look up to the Western society as if Western society is actually better, you know, just because of that complex, you know, instead of actually dealing with themselves and being the best they could be. So there is that problem going on. Like, so. Take pride, in other words, taking pride in what they have, being the best they could be. It's, and there's a lot of greed and corruption when it comes to that.
Right.
But there are people out there in which they are revolutionaries and stuff, and they don't fare well. Just like what happened to the civil rights leaders out here, in which they're imprisoned. You know, their families are taken away. They're killed. You know. Yeah, so it does happen out there. And a lot of the times, too, it puts in context in the fact that, you know what, in our daily lives, we actually go for the low-hanging fruit. We think, oh, you know what, I was talking to one of my friends, Siobhan, the other day, and I was telling her, like, humans are tribal in nature anyway, you know, because I lived in a place where it was predominantly black. I was really young, but I know fully well people were differentiating within themselves in terms of language. Oh, you're Igbo, you're Hausa, you're Yoruba, this, so I shouldn't marry this person, you shouldn't marry this person, whatever, you know? So there is that. Man, great question, William. I mean, you're going to let me get into another topic out here, which is probably going to be some of a topics we're going to be tackling later on, and the fact that how tribal are humans in nature, you know, compared to just talking about the low-hanging fruit of differentiations between race and all the other things, but... Well, I appreciate you. Yeah, so there are similarities. There are people that are civil rights activists in Africa different places in Africa. Mandela's one. I mean, he just happened to survive it. You know, there's some right. people like Thomas Sankara that didn't survive it. I mean, so, yeah, so they're very similar. And yes, and absolutely. Great question, man. Thanks a lot, William. Appreciate
You're
you.
Welcome.
Thank
All
you.
Right.
Let's get to LaDonna. Hey, LaDonna. Good afternoon, LaDonna. Welcome to the show, LaDonna.
I'm calling from Lakeland.
Hey, from Lakeland.
I was thinking about the protesting, and I remember when I was watching when Donald Trump was running for office, and they were out in California, and my husband and I are watching the news, you know, and the chaos that was on every night and well since. And, you know, there were people in the crowd, and they were wearing, like, colors from Mexico, and they had their head covered. And back then we said, you know, nobody really would do that because they would just grab you and take you to jail, you know, and then they would know who they were,
right.
but they never did that.
Hmm.
And right then we said, you know, there's somebody planting those people. And I, at the time I didn't think about, you know, Russia being involved like
right.
they are, or, you know, we thought it was just the Trump people doing that, causing trouble, you know. And they never seemed to be real afraid of those people. They just, like, made a point of those people.
And right.
Even then, you know, we started noticing, you know, like, that just didn't make sense to us.
And it brings me to a point. When William Barr was actually being questioned yesterday about the final report, mm-hmm. where the special counsel is probably going to give his final report, and he
right.
talked about how he's one of his answers that confused, I guess, the Senate Democrats was the fact that he probably won't release everything to the public. Now,
mm-hmm.
I believe that's code word for there's some things that just not beneficial for the country for us to reveal. And I believe these people know a lot more. Because
mm-hmm.
I can't imagine Russia just did all that online. I mean, the report last week Wednesday, was that the former campaign manager was actually giving polling data to the Russians.
Right,
why was
right.
he doing that? You know? So, like,
right.
so I believe there's more.
To Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania,
right.
you know?
So, yeah. So, I think you're onto something there. So, hopefully, we get some factual information out there. And, of course, there's some behind off-the-record stuff that might come up. And if I hear, I'll let
yeah.
you guys
and
know.
And later on, there were some reports where they did say that they were going and actually organizing rallies,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, there's a lot to unpack.
Right.
And, you know, I just, that just popped up when you were talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Make a good point.
Yeah.
Great observation, LaDonna. I love you guys. You guys are so smart. I mean, like, you bring up so many cracks.
We've been very concerned. My husband, he said, you know, he doesn't go online or anything, but he mm-hmm. said, he was sitting there, and several times he said he could see now how we could have had a civil war, because we never understood how brethren could be against brethren or cousin against cousin,
mm.
you know, countrymen against countrymen, like, you know, and, you know, we never understood that. But even our friends and our family are so vicious, you know, and so, like, it's given them license to be hateful
right.
and vicious and just so ignorant, you know, in their facts. And he said that he could see how that could happen, you know. And now my friends and my family are actually going out and saying stuff like that. Like, if something happens to their president, they're going to take up arms. And, like, it's just so crazy.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah, well, you have, like, the president of the United States actually encouraging that kind of talk. But
yeah.
appreciate you, LaDonna. Thank you so much for your insight. Thank you. Let's get phone lines right now. Let's go to Jackson from Wesley Chapel. Hey, Jackson. Good afternoon, Jackson. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey, how are you?
I mean, what am I going to tell you? Barbara Jordan was from the state of Texas, Houston area specifically. There's a school, Barbara Jordan Vocational School Institute, mm-hmm. was named after her. Such profound speech. Very great speaker.
Right.
I lived in her era. Well, I tell you, this man is a reincarnation of Hitler. All of a sudden, propaganda becomes what? Fake news.
Yeah.
Why you get so dissatisfied with folk because you're dictatorial and anarchist, what are you going to do? Snuff and kill them out also?
Interesting.
I rest my case.
Thanks a lot, Jackson. I appreciate you. That's Jackson from Wesley Chapel. Making another reference to Barbara Jordan. Yes, Barbara Jordan, 1976 Democratic National Convention keynote address, the speech. It was delivered July 12, 1976 in New York. Yeah, I'm going to post that. We go to Danny. What's up, Danny? Good afternoon, Danny. Welcome to the show, Danny.
How you doing, brother?
How are you doing?
I'll tell you what. You were talking about Martin Luther King earlier. And I'll never forget that speech that he did at Riverside when he spoke against the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And you know what? What courage. What courage, Nola, that he had. All the people who were pro-war, all the white people were like, oh, my God, I can't believe that he did that. Not only that, Nola, some of his own African Americans turned against him.
Oh yeah, there were a whole lot of people.
Some of his best friends, and then he couldn't believe it. And that's what you call courage that's lacking today, Nola. Imagine if he would be here today with speaking out against this madman. And
the question I have in my head is like, if he was alive, do you think we will be in this position, or would he have spearheaded a movement that will have never regressed? Because I feel like even right after, just because of the assassinations that happened during that era and the imprisonments and everything else, it dampened the movement a whole lot, you know?
And there were people out there
that were less inspired to actually step into the vacuum, and that kind of like...
Yeah. Oh, no. I think he would have definitely been on the forefront again. And, you know, and that's why I leave you with this. Donald Trump wouldn't be fit to shine his shoes.
Well, I think that's popular opinion right there. I do appreciate you, though. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot. That's Danny from Tampa. Yes. And the debate out there, like, you know, the people talk about the pros and cons, and especially when it comes to the pros and cons and integration. And it's a lot to unpack there when you think about it. Now, for what he knew, and later on in his right before his death, when he started talking about, you know, he feared he was leading his people into a burning building. And there's a big debate out there when it comes to integration. What did integration do to the black community just as a whole? Like, did it dilute the movement, and that could have been used as leverage, you know, to become more powerful as a community to face injustice in this country? Did he do that? Or was integration the hope that, you know what, everything was going to be great if everybody came together? And so there's that ongoing debate that goes on, and I fight myself sometimes because I never want to say, you know what, Dr. King might have gotten it wrong, but who knows? Maybe he would have continued to lead the movement past what he did in the 60s and evolved in the 70s and the 80s. And who knows what that would have done to where we are right now in 2019. But I think it's pretty interesting. So it's 90 years to end a day from Dr. King's birthday. It was 90 years yesterday and a day, and I'm looking forward to, I believe, the parade on Monday. I will be there with the WMNF radio. So if you see us out there, for those who don't know what I look like, you probably get a chance to see me out there on Monday. And I'm looking forward to that. But I want to thank everybody that joined in today, all the callers, all the contributors via email, text messages. I do appreciate everybody for continuous conversation out here at WMNF, for the platform that we have out there. We do appreciate your support, your continued support. Please continue to support the tip jar right there on WMNF.org. Download the WMNF app so that way you can listen to us on the go, so that way you don't have to be stuck to a radio. And I don't know who actually has that nowadays. You can listen to us on the app. A big shout out to all the new listeners today. We had a lot of new listeners and a lot of new callers today, and I continue to appreciate people like that. But we'll be back better than ever next week, Wednesday. Stay tuned. I believe we have executive sessions or with John Gilmore and Adam coming up next. And that's WMNF Tampa.